Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 7, and verses 22 through 25. And this verse is, which one? Okay, so I'll go back to the verse number 22. And this is a continuation of this pastime of the killing of demon Trinavarta. Now, Krishna has just been picked up by the whirlwind demon. For a moment, the whole pasturing ground was overcast with dense darkness from the dust storm, and Mother Yasoda was unable to find her son where she had placed him. Because of the bits of sand thrown about by Trinavarta, people could not see themselves or anyone else, and thus they were illusioned and disturbed. Because of the dust storm stirred up by the strong whirlwind, Mother Yasoda could find no trace of her son, nor she could understand why. Thus she fell down on the ground like a cow who had lost her calf and began to lament very pitifully. Today's verse. When the force of the dust storm and the wind subsided, Yasoda's friends, the other gopis, approached Mother Yasoda, hearing her pitiful crying. Not seeing Krishna present, they too felt very much aggrieved and joined Mother Yasoda in crying, their eyes full of tears. In Srila Prabhupada's very, very, very short purport. This attachment of the gopis to Krishna is wonderful and transcendental. The center of all the activities of the gopis was Krishna. When Krishna was there, they were happy. And when Krishna was not there, they were unhappy. Thus, when Mother Yasoda was lamenting Krishna's absence, the other ladies also began to cry. Om Agyanta Vedandasya Gena Jena Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stabditam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Dadati Swam Padantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the killing of demon Trinavarta, one of the many, many demons which were sent by Kamsa in order to disturb the residents of Vrindavan and make a futile effort, it's futile, to try to kill Krishna. And we're hearing about the actual play out this pastime. Krishna is all-knowing, and therefore whatever he does, you know, everything is already understood by himself. But he plays these parts in such a way as to give pleasure to his devotees and to enact his transcendental pastimes. So killing demons is also one of his pastimes. There's a class of people, and Prabhupada talks about this in some of his lectures, that like to really go into Krishna's pastimes of the gopis dancing with Krishna and Rasa dance and other similar amorous pastimes, but they avoid these killing of the demon pastimes because they think these are, you know, not so important, or really the essence is gopi lila like that. But Prabhupada said he's both. He's the best of all lovers and he's also the best of all killers. And anyone who tries to interfere with Krishna's pastimes, such as these demons, gets the mercy of Krishna. I mean, these demons are very special in such a way that to have that facility to be able to come to Vrindavan and to be able to actually hold, it was like this demon was holding Krishna on his back. Krishna was riding around. It's described, he was like, you know, having fun. It's like a little bit of an airplane ride. So actually this demon was giving Krishna some pleasure. And Krishna was enjoying it. But then he thought, all right, fun's over. Now get back to business. And so and then, of course, the demon was killed. And here it's described how what Krishna does to his devotees is just like, it's, we might even say it's a little difficult for ordinary people or anybody to understand how he puts his devotees in such anxiety. Because there's such love for him. They love him so much that they, as Prabhupada mentions in this purport, that when he's there, happiness reigns. When he's gone, happiness is, there's no such thing. It just no longer exists. It's like a dark, deep well of unhappiness. And so, when Krishna was gone, Mother Yasoda and all the other gopis were feeling, oh my God, what has happened? This is worse than death. They would have gave up their lives immediately, but still they wanted to find Krishna first. The pain of the fact that Krishna may be harmed or he's no longer with us is excruciating. When love reaches such a pinnacle of intensity, when that love becomes disturbed by something of the opposite nature, some danger or some separation, it causes great difficulties in the hearts of the devotees who have that love. And Krishna does that. You might say he's a little, can't use the word cruel, but he puts his devotees into these situations where it really puts them in this anxiety of unhappiness. And he does that all the time with the one demon after another. And this is, but what happens when Krishna comes back after killing the demon and everyone is there and Krishna's okay and everyone feels happy and Krishna's smiling and they're smiling, the whole world seems like, you know, the spiritual world. They're so happy and they're so relieved of the suffering that they were experiencing, that the happiness reaches a higher level of existence. The intensity goes even higher. Because as is explained, that transcendental happiness has no limit. Anandam Bhuti Vardhanam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, that happiness that comes from transcendence is as deep as transcendence. Therein, transcendence has no limit. The happiness has no limit. So that experience that they're having when Krishna returns after such a dangerous experience causes them such intense happiness. So Krishna takes them from one side to the other. You might say he plays with the devotees' hearts. He does that. Even today we see, you know, sometimes a devotee is put into a difficult situation due to some circumstance, and they feel there's no way out of the circumstance. They're chanting, they're praying, but it seems like the circumstance is difficult. Then all of a sudden, because they never lose their faith in Krishna, they keep that faith, although they can't seem to find their way out of the difficulty. After due course of time, Krishna does something. And everything becomes understood. And then again, their happiness returns. So Krishna likes to do that. He likes to put his devotees into a situation where there's nothing left. Prabhupada used to say, and he used his own example in his own life. He'd say, Prabhupada would say, if Krishna favors you, he gives you so many things. But if he really favors you, if he really wants to show his favor, he takes it all away. Haribo. And then there's nothing left but Krishna. That's it. And we have to come to that stage anyway in life. Because at one point, when everything will be taken away, everything is, if we don't have that intense desire of devotion to Krishna, then there's nothing. There's no Krishna and there's no nothing else. Therefore, that's worse than whatever you could think of. So in that sense, this preparing the devotee for ultimately only taking shelter of Krishna. Krishna does that throughout life. And the devotees who have, what we say, so much success materially and have so many material opulence, they're not attached to it. They understand this is Krishna's mercy. The residents of Vrindavan, I mean, Nanda Maharaj, he had 900,000 cows. He was the king of Vrindavan. And he had so many loyal followers. He was respected. He was honored. He was, what we say, a very respectable, honorable personality. But his real happiness was Krishna, not all these other things. His only happiness, not real, only happiness was Krishna. So these demons, when they come, they help bring about a greater intensity of love for Krishna, or a greater attachment to Krishna. And at the same time, a greater, for us, who are maybe not on the platform of pure devotional service, they help us to become a little detached more and more from the things of this world, seeing them as ultimately, let me say, something that can't give us shelter or can't give us satisfaction and happiness. So that's Krishna's mercy. And this demon, he is, the acharyas give a little bit of a, what we say, analogous understanding of who this demon represents. This dust storm, this whirlwind, has a very significant part in this pastime, because it causes everyone to not to be able to see anything. It's like blind. When there's wind and there's dust, all you can do is shield your eyes from getting damaged by this dust storm. So you can't see anything. And even if you try to see, you can't. All you can see is the dust and the wind. So this demon represents that type of consciousness where a person just wants to be very much respected through materialistic learning, gathering so much knowledge and information and so many, what we say, understandings of so many subjects. Can speak on anything, expert in many things, knowledgeable, maybe even has some, you know, some accreditations from the outside world from his knowledge, this type of person. I remember I went to one college one time and I was invited by this one professor to give a lecture at his college. This was like back in the 1990s, I think, more than 20 years ago. And I came into his office, and his office, the ceiling in his office was as high as this ceiling. The office wasn't as big as this room, but the ceiling was that high. And there were books all the way up to the top of the ceiling. I mean, the whole three walls were covered with books from waist level all the way up. And I was just like, whoa. And I just had to ask the question, did you read all these books? Just to, you know, that was my curious question. He said no. He was honest. Well, then I kind of dropped the subject from there because I didn't want to find fault with him. But the point was, you know, they collect books, they read a few things, they stack them up, they have nice libraries, and they have all references. But you ask them, who are you? I'm Professor so-and-so. No, you're not. That's not you. That's your body. Who are you? Let me think. They can't figure out who they are. And devotees also know the basic principle of actual knowledge is to know you're not this body. Jai Sisi Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. Sitaram, Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Gornitai Ki Jai. So the devotees know, I mean, devotees know the very most important philosophical, transcendental subject principle is that we are not this body. Where this materialist, they have so much knowledge in so many categories and subjects and can speak very, what we say, interesting, track the minds of others who are of the same nature, and sometimes bewilder people by the amounts of understanding they have. But it's all srama eva hi kevalam, as Prabhupada. It's useless. Why? Because at the time of death, what can you do? It's not going to save you. All your books and all your learnings and all your PhDs and all your accreditations, whatever else you have, is gone. It's a boat that has holes in it. It's going to sink along with you. So this demon represents, when we say, accumulation of materialistic knowledge. Sometimes devotees get interested in a lot of other subjects outside of Krishna consciousness. And there may be some reason for using that knowledge to serve the Lord or to propagate spiritual teachings to others. But as a general interest, we don't find so much. We find it's all mixed with karma and at best gyan. And if sometimes you find also materialistic knowledge, there's a little bhakti in there. Because the principle of bhakti is you can find it anywhere. If you look for it, you can find it even in the gross materialist. The element of devotion, although maybe not directed in the right way, it's still there in some element. But ultimately, it's all full of how to enjoy the senses, how to enjoy the subtle mind, how to propagate oneself as, you know, in the materialistic sense. So this is the whirlwind demon. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, quoted by Srila Prabhupada, makes this statement quite often, that materialistic knowledge simply causes one to become a big ass. There's a statement like that. He can speak very nicely, he's braying very nicely, and he's making very nice ass sounds. And guess what? All the other asses are thinking, oh, such nice poetry. He's really the best of all ass. And so this is materialistic life. You know, they attract the people of the same nature, but it's all useless. But what the danger is, it diverts one's attention to the real goal of life and gives this false understanding that I'm successful. Here's the problem. It gives the false understanding that I'm successful. And sometimes we see, you know, they have a lot of respect. Of course, we respect people who have such, when we say, literary knowledge, but we don't respect them so much for their literary knowledge, but we respect them for the sense that they're a spirit soul part and parcel of Krishna. That's the respect we give. A materialistic knowledge simply is a big burden. And that's all it is. It's like the ass who simply works hard simply for some grass which is available everywhere. And he's working so hard and he gets a little bit of grass. And he thinks, oh, I'm successful. PhD. You know what PhD means? Permanent head damage. Of course, we use different terms like that. I remember when I was in New Vrindavan in the early days. I just joined 1973. And we were with Sariputta, the famous scientist. He was such a great devotee, because he left his body about 10 years ago. But he was a genius, and he was there with us as a new bhakta in New Vrindavan. He had come from New York, he was there for a while. And then he was doing menial services. He was digging holes in the ground so we could put posts for the cows, and so we could make fences. So we could make fences for our cows there. And so, you know, the devotees were thinking, this man has got a PhD, and he's just digging holes in the ground. So devotees were a little vocal. They went to the leaders there and said, you know, this devotee is a He's a PhD, and you got him digging holes in the ground, putting posts in. And the leader of the community said, yes, PhD, post hole digger. Anyway, so, but of course, the Krishna arranged later on to use his intelligence to serve such nicely and to propagate scientific theories according to Shastra. And so he did wonderful, wonderful and very valuable services with that knowledge. So when it's used in devotional service, then it becomes a great, what we say, benefit for others like that. So anything material, if it's not used in devotional service, is useless. It's useless. But Prabhupada said, if you have no qualities, in other words, if you're not so learned, you're not so, cannot do things, but if you're a devotee, you're in the best position. You're glorious. But if you're a devotee and you have all these other things, he said it's like adding a zero to the one. So then, that those, what we say, good materialistic qualities now become transcendental and can be used to the service of the Lord and to spread Krishna consciousness. So therefore they have value. But without that one, which is devotional service to the Lord, it's all useless like that. So this demon, very proud of his power, I remember in the discussion, while I was reading in another, he was talking with Kamsa, and he was so sure that he was going to kill Krishna. Oh, no problem. You've called on the right man, Kamsa. You choose the right person. I'm the one to do it. No problem. Because the other demons had failed, Putana had failed, and Sakarasura had failed, like that. But Krishna makes people think, just like, you know, this demon was thinking, I've got Krishna, and now it's just a matter of time, I'm going to finish him off. So demoniac civilization is similar to that. They think, oh, you know, we'll spread our demoniac culture more and more, and then ultimately we'll take over the world. Like that. This is their plans, Prabhupada said. Plans of the demon is to take over the world. But then, after some time, Krishna consciousness will come forward. There's an old saying in Christianity, time and truth go hand in hand, which is very true. In time, truth will prevail, because what is evil, what is contrary to what we say good qualities, cannot stand the test of time. It's shadow. It's a reflection of the reality. The real reality is Krishna and devotional service. And pious activities are also good because they support and ultimately can lead to devotional service. Okay, so sorry for this unprepared class. I just didn't prepare for this class at all. But anyway, I don't want to take too much time. Any questions or comments on...